Welcome back to second hour here on 106.7 The Fan. Ben Standing with you. I cover the Washington Commanders for my Substack, lastmanstanding.substack.com, which of course means that I was out at Commanders training camp the past, past four days, had the chance to watch everything going on there, and so did our guest here, my guy Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports. My guy Mitch is, I'm talking about indispensable players. If we're just talking like valuable or hardest working, I don't know, Mitch is top of the list, but he's on the list. I was complaining earlier about how early I have to get there. Mitch, what time do you actually have to get out to for an 8 o'clock start for all this? What time do you have to get out there?
Yeah, my alarm in the morning is 4:45, but that's mostly got to get the dog out before we go to camp all day. But I'm there by 6:45, 7 a.m. at the latest every morning. It's 3 weeks of you sweat in the summer so that you can sweat in the cold in February.
Right. Well, yeah, it's good practice for you because you like to wear shorts no matter what time of the year it is. So, you got to practice now so your body's ready to handle it in November, December. You always do the bit about who's the first guy to come out onto the practice field, and it's a good fun there. Has there been one person that's been dominating so far?
No, I mean, we're three practices in, and we've had three different guys make it out there first. In years past, usually the first couple of practices, it's kind of a rotation of players, and then it usually settles in. In years past, it's always been one of the wide receivers who's kind of on the back end trying to make the roster. Usually they get out there early to hit the jugs machine. So my guess before the season, before training camp, was that Chris Hilton was going to be my horse. But it's been a couple different guys. It's been we had Johnny Newton one time. We had who else did we have?
Wasn't Sonny Styles one of them?
Sonny Styles has not been one of them yet.
Oh. Well then, ignore that. Pray, come on, Sonny Styles. What are you doing? You got to get on the Tischler list.
It was De'Ami Brown was the first practice. Dietrich Wise was the second practice, which there was some debate whether that counted since he's not technically on the active roster. And then Johnny Newton was the first in the field on Saturday. I guess it was when we were out there.
Well, you're the one making the rules, so anybody who's questioning you can take a jump. Let me mention Johnny Newton, because I think Johnny Newton's a very interesting player in a couple of regards. Obviously, when we talk about, this team going up a notch, it would be great if that 2024 class, headlined by Jaden Daniels, but then the supporting cast has been a little more hit or miss, to say the least, if some of those guys jumped up and Johnny Newton was the second guy picked in that draft class, I think number 36 overall. He just hasn't been high in the rotation a ton so far. He's not shown he can be a three-down player. And every offseason, they keep adding somebody else to sort of be in the way. Last year, it was Javon Kinlaw. This year, it's Tim Settle. But the thing is, I don't even know if any of us are really talking about, hey, they need Johnny Newton to step up, blah, 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 because they have more depth. And this is kind of how it is across the board. I think they just have, in general, more depth. And, again, I'm not saying you don't want Newton to step up, but I'm saying in years past, if the number 36 player picked was not showing out, you'd be like, oh boy, they got no shot. At least now they got other options, even if they do need a guy like that to do more.
Yeah, and we talked about it on Beltway Football a little bit. I've seen Johnny Newton flash a little bit in the middle of the field. Now, granted, part of that is going to be the Nick Allegretti injury and going up against Julian Good-Jones and Matt Golden some. But I will say that what impressed me about him was not kind of the flashes that we've seen throughout the season, last year, then during training camp in the passing game. He's been making a couple plays in the run game. And I think that's really where you want to see Johnny Newton kind of take that next step. You want to see him be able to find his way into being more of a reliable three-down player. And that's going to start off with being able to be stout against the run. And we've seen him kind of splash through the offensive line a couple times and, tap up a running back, which would eventually be a TFL if they were in pads, assuming that he made the play, all those different things, since we haven't seen them in pads yet. But I really like the quickness and kind of his ability to kind of knife between blockers and get into the backfield. It's not every down, obviously. He'd be an all-pro if he was. But I'm starting to see it a little bit more this camp, at least three practices in, than I feel like I've seen, you know, in years past.
It's just staying with that 2024 class. Again, obviously, Jaden Daniels, we've already seen him be pretty good. Obviously, he's going to have to be really good at all times for this team to succeed. But then you got Newton, also in the second round, Ben Sinnott, Mikey Sandersteel. Third round, Luke McCaffrey, Brandon Coleman. Sandersteel's obviously played the most of that group. And, you know, there's some questions about how's he going to fit on the outside, or are they going to move him back inside, or how's that going to work? But for the other guys, is there somebody else that you're like, okay, if I got to put some chips down on somebody taking that next step, is there somebody from that group that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do Mikey Sanders still real quick, because I'm actually kind of pretty high on him in this defense. I think with a front seven that's going to get after the quarterback, you're going to see quarterbacks get rid of the ball. Hopefully, at least the plan will be for the quarterbacks to get rid of the ball a little bit quicker. And we saw Sanders still have really good ball skills in his rookie year. I think he's going to have an opportunity to create some more turnovers. But when you look at that class, to me, I think Ben Sinnott is the name that really kind of stands out to me. And that's despite the John Bates, you know, hamstring injury that's going to keep him out for a couple of weeks. But we've seen already, you know, with David Blough, and as he's starting to work through this offense, a lot more tight ends on the field. And I would say a lot more dynamic tight end routes, a lot more seam routes, a lot more of them getting, you know, 10, 15 yards up the field and not just kind of be safety nets. And obviously Chigakonkwo is going to be the, you know, the wide receiver, quote unquote, tight end, the guy that they split out a little bit more and run out of, you know, standing up sets. But I think that Sinnott has shown a couple really nice catches in camp. You know, I guess on Saturday he had a drop or two, which isn't great, but that happens to the best of us. You have a typo, I misspeak on TV, whatever happens, you know, those things happen to the best of us. But I do think Sinnott has a real opportunity in this offense with the amount of tight ends and the amount of different ways that the tight ends are going to be used to really kind of take a step forward and be kind of a nice piece of this offense. For Jaden Daniels to use, you know, as David Blough kind of gets him on the field a little bit more than he has in past.
Yeah, I talked earlier, we're speaking with Mitch Tischler from the Beltway Football Podcast and Monumental Sports. I was talking earlier about how, you know, in talking to some people about the 12 and 13 personnel, it's just like, look, there's just not, teams just don't have defenders who are capable of being a presence at the line of scrimmage and being able to run in coverage to cover a tight end if they've got route running chops or athletic or whatever. And, you know, with Ben Sinnott, look, obviously it's been a quiet 2 years. I think some of that was just not a good fit for the Kingsbury offense. But if he's now in the 13 personnel, I mean, the guy is a crazy athlete, as a lot of these players are. He played five sports in high school. You know, he's got good size. He can catch the ball, can run after the catch. If he's the third guy and he's matched up against some linebacker that's just not really designed to run with a player like that, I mean, that could be a guy, a bit of a weapon. I'm not saying like 50 catches. I just mean like, hey, you know, you can find ways to make this guy interesting out there. No doubt about it. Do you think though, like your guy, of course, Mitch loves the offensive line. If Bates is out he's out at least 2 weeks. Bates or Sinnott's a little bit lighter though than Bates. Do you think he could fill in that role if he has to? If Bates is out a bit longer.
Yeah, I think he certainly can. We saw some good blocking out of Bates last year, particularly as David Blough's getting these tight ends in motion a little bit more. One of the things that I, you know, kind of schematically like about, you know, with all the different movement is certainly, and I like focusing on O-line and run play, but you think about these tight ends as they, you know, they set wide and kind of motion in. And, you know, the ball's hiked as they're motioning in. They already have a head of steam as they're pulling across the offensive line to pull around and pick off someone on the edge or a linebacker. I think that's something that Sinnott can certainly do, and we saw it last year. I think one thing we have to keep in mind, and granted it was the Cliff Kingsbury offense last year, but when they were tight end deficient, you saw them bringing in Trent Scott and Andrew Wiley as, you know, kind of, you know, sixth O lineman, but ultimately playing quote unquote the run blocking tight end role in that offense. I think, you know, there's a chance with the 13-12 personnel probably that we're going to see some more extra O linemen on the field from time to time, particularly in short yardage. But as far as having somebody who can both, you know, kind of block and also get out and make some plays, I do think that Sinnott really can step into that role. and if he's given an opportunity, can do that.
All right, you know, again, pads are coming out on Monday. This is a very exciting, day. And it's not just like for us. I mean, the players are jacked, you know, because they get to go full out. You know, we've talked about how the defense has been ahead of the offense, and that's typically how these things work. But one of the reasons why is for the offensive line, when they're trying to block and there's no pads, there's like nothing to grab onto, where the defense is just, you know, pushing. And that's, you know, for them, it's a little bit easier without the pads. What do you, from the offensive line perspective, what is most interesting to you about the pads? Is there some part of the actual practice that for you is telling about what, because there's still no tackling out there. So is there something telling for you about pads from the offensive line perspective?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the one-on-one pass rushing drills are can't miss television every time that they happen. Particularly, I mean, Adafe Owe and Laremy Tunsil one-on-one drills are going to be fireworks. I mean, there's nothing gets me out of bed quicker than those one-on-one pass rush drills. But we also know that we know what Adafe Owe is, and obviously we haven't seen him in the burgundy and gold, so, you know, I want to see it happen. But we've seen his strength. We've seen, you know, in years past in L.A. and in Baltimore kind of what he can do. But I think functionally, I think football-wise, the most important thing that I'm going to be watching is it's going to be at center and kind of left guard and how they match up, you know, with Daron Payne and Tim Settle and Johnny Newton. And, you know, I think Charles Omenihue, if he starts kind of working on the inside a little bit. To me, I think that's going to be, you know, the most interesting thing. And what I really like about, as you look at kind of the group of, you know, defensive tackles slash nose tackles, whatever word you want to use for the big guys on defense, is you have, you know, Daron and Johnny, who are much more of your, you know, kind of quick, you know, more speed guys. Obviously, they have plenty of strength themselves, but they also have, you know, the bag where they can, you know, use some of the speed techniques to work on those O-line. But then you also have Tim Settle and Shai Tuttle, who are a little bit more just kind of your pure kind of strength guys who are going to be able to, who are going to, you know, try and pick you up and walk you back to the quarterback. So for me, particularly as Nick Allegretti is out, I think it's going to be really good work for Matt Golden and Julian Good-Jones. And I think, you know, I'm going to be looking a lot at what Matt Golden can do, because I do think that he is pretty stout and can work really well, you know, in the quote-unquote phone booth between the two guards. I think where he needs a little bit of work is going to be kind of the footwork and more in the run game, getting to the second level and being able to pick off extra blockers. But I'm also comparing what I've seen on an NFL field to, you know, kind of what we saw from Matt Golden at Michigan State. And after talking to him last week, and we all know how big of a difference it is between college and pros, this is going to be the first opportunity we really have to see, you know, trial by fire for a sixth round rookie, to see kind of how strong he is and how good he can be in pass pro.
All right, one guy I have not really talked about a ton here this morning is the guy that we typically talk about the most, and that is Jaden Daniels. I thought the first two practice sessions, which were pretty much exclusively in the red zone, not necessarily his best work. Throws missed the mark at times. Of course, it's a just tighter scenario down there. It's just harder to squeeze the ball in, especially when the defense, you know, it's not really running plays per se. It's trying to work on different parts of the game. And, you know, you never know what the call is. He did look better, though, I thought. Yesterday, we had more room to operate with as the ball was being placed further down the field. What's been your takeaway so far on Jaden Daniels, and what do you think pad day, he's not going to get hit, but what do you think pad day means for a quarterback as well?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Jaden looked, you know, pretty good. It's tough when there's no threat of a deep ball. I mean, what's the longest pass that we've seen, you know, air yards in camp? 15 yards, maybe 20 yards at most, but I don't even think 20 yards. So, like, there's no real threat of deep ball, so there's not a lot of respect from defense for going over the top. Not to mention all the red zone work is obviously in tight quarters. But I kind of like it. I think about it, you know, like you're practicing, you know, the, like with a donut on your golf club, where it's a little bit harder in the red zone. And once they get out into the midfield and start actually opening up the offense, hopefully things feel a little bit easier for them. My two real takeaways for Jaden are one, I think that he's working his progressions really quickly. There are times that you see him, you know, working pre-snap to identify what's happening. And I think it's a you know, tip your cap to the defense that they're kind of throwing a lot of different looks at him, which is a really nice thing this early in camp to have. But where he's working his looks pre-snap, and as he snaps the ball, he's quick, boom, 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 one, two, three, four, going across, trying to find, you know, the guy that's open. And I like that. That shows a comfortability with the concepts that David Blau is trying to have him work through. And then the second thing with Jaden is every once in a while we see those, you know, elite quarterback throws. And certainly there have been some bad throws from him. It hasn't been all, you know, sunshine and rainbows. But he's had a couple incredible throws. He had a corner of the end zone kind of fade ball to Treylon Burks, I think, on day two. That was just put in a place that Trey was the only one that was going to catch the ball. He was the only one that had an opportunity at it. And obviously Trey came down and made a great catch and was able to score the touchdown. We saw him rolling out to the right. I believe it was on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. The days are kind of running together. It's a bit of Groundhog Day out there.
Yeah, no doubt.
And saw Jaden kind of drop to the side and throw a little, you know, Pat Mahomes-esque sidearm, you know, bullet. I think that was to Rashad White, if I'm not mistaken. But you see kind of those elite throws. And, you know, I said it all kind of offseason, and I still kind of stand by it. I think the NFL has forgotten how good Jaden Daniels is because of the injuries last year. And when he shows us those glimpses of, you know, who he is or who he was or who he can be, it gets me really excited about, you know, some of the things that I hope he's able to do in this offense. Obviously, number one thing is got to stay healthy, got to be on the field, got to be able to play in those games. But he's still an elite quarterback, and I think he and David Blau and the Commanders are going to remind the NFL this season of just who number five is.
All right, a couple rapid-fire questions here for Mitch. I know Mitch can handle this. So first off, if Jaden's doing better, that probably means the receivers are doing better, and I think in general Saturday was a good day for a lot of the receivers. It, of course, the big question is, are they going to go get Stephon Diggs? Should they add another receiver? Do they have to do it now? Should they wait? Where, after 3 days of camp, I know it's not much sample size, but where are you on, like, urgency to sign Diggs, or not worried about such a thing like that right now?
I don't have a major urgency to sign Diggs. I do think that he could help. I think when you look at it kind of glass half full, he will absolutely help you this season. I think the other side of that coin is I believe that he's a pretty similar receiver in terms of what they're going to potentially ask him to do as Antonio Williams is. And if you bring in Steph Diggs, is that going to take away work from that rookie? I think that, to me, that's kind of what the big question is. But as I've watched practice and as I go through it, certainly they don't have, you know, the second, you know, stud receiver. But I do think that you look at the group of receivers that they have behind Terry, and I think that it's workable. I do think that this receiving core in 2026 is better than the receiving core that Jaden had in 2024, and you look at how electric that season was and how electric that offense was. And for kind of that reason, I'm not, you know, overly pounding the table for Steph Diggs, but I do think that he could make a difference and he could help him for this season.
All right, last question, Mitch. Obviously, one thing that's always fun about camp for all of us is, you know, planting your flag on some guys off the radar. Yeah, an undrafted free agent or somebody that nobody's predicting to make the team that you're like, you know what? Keep an eye on this guy. And based on 3 days, I think there's something here. Who's that guy for you so far in camp?
All right. I'm gonna elongate this a bit, and I know we asked the rapid fire. Defensively, I think Joshua Joseph is gonna be a really nice situational pass rusher for this team. I see him getting, you know, 15, 20 snaps a game or so in mostly pass rush situations. And I just really like what I've seen from him. Aside from the frame and the size of him, you see he gets his arms extended really easily, which I guess shows his strength. And he's able to use that kind of power to speed transition really well. And mostly we'll see, obviously, once they get into the one-on-ones with pads, you know, how much he's able to do. But I think this pass rush as a whole is going to be much improved. And the idea of Kalavon and Menahue and Owe and Joshua Joseph, a bunch of these guys who have so much, you know, pass rush ability, not to mention Dorrance Armstrong when he comes back, I think will be an interesting one. And on offense, not an under the radar, not an undrafted player, but I started working through my head of a bit of a hot take with Deami Brown. I think he's going to come close to touching 1,000 yards this season. And I don't know if I was ready to really unleash that on the world, but I guess talking to you, Ben, there it is. I have really high hopes for what Deami can do in this offense. And I think he could be like a 3 catches for 70 yards, pen him in, you know, basically weekly, bi-weekly for, you know, for a 50-plus yard, 40-plus yard catch in these games.
Wow. I'm so glad you told me this so I can unleash it on the media room tomorrow.
I am sure that's going to go over like a fart in church, but I'm not ready. I'm circling around it. I think that I'm ready to make that declaration, but it's certainly been ping-ponging back and forth between my ears for a couple days now.
Nice. All right. Mitch Tischer, Monumental Sports, Beltway Football Podcast. You can hear that kind of a take as well as more salient points about the line and this team overall. Mitch, I really appreciate you coming through for me today. I will see you out there tomorrow.
Can't wait.
All right. Great stuff there from the Mitch Tischer. We're going to go from the gridiron to the diamond. Major League Baseball trade deadline coming up, and the Dodgers are breaking everybody's brains again. We'll get to all that next here on 106.7 The Fan. All right, so we've been talking, of course, about the Commanders training camp, and the training camp is all about leading towards the regular season. They're going to open up, of course, against the Eagles, but that's not until like the second week of September. The MLB trade deadline is happening tomorrow. 6 o'clock deadline is when we figure out which teams have made some bold moves. There's already been, of course, a huge one with the Dodgers, of course, acquiring Tarik Skubal from the Tigers. Are the Nats going to do anything? We're going to figure this all out right now with our guy who thinks he knows a little bit about Nats. I think he does, right? Ryan Clary, right? I mean, you know your way around the Nats. You might even talk about them on a regular basis.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think I might know a thing or two about the Washington Nationals, but hopefully they'll make a trade here, Ben, because I'm like sitting here just kind of pondering thoughts right now. Like, what's going on? What's taking so long?
All right, well, before we get to them, this is the big news, of course, of the MLB trade deadline is the fact that the Dodgers acquired Tarik Skubal from the Tigers. Now, in and of itself, we all kind of knew Skubal was probably going to get traded. He's a free agent at the end of the year. The Tigers are thinking, hey, we're not going to be able to come up to a deal. It's better to move him and you get what you can get at this point. Because it's an expiring deal, you're only going to get so much. And they got a few prospects from the Dodgers that are considered to be pretty good. Okay. The question, though, is, how on earth do the Dodgers do this again? Why are the Dodgers the only team that is getting these players? And if nothing epitomizes why they may be a holdout or a strike or whatever next year, is because it is literally one team is going for it and everybody else is afraid of going for it, or they don't have the money or whatever it is. What's your read on what the hell is going on here that the Dodgers were once again able to get the best guy out there?
I mean, I think this exposes like a bigger issue in baseball. I mean, we all know about the salary cap and how the owners, they want a salary cap. The players clearly do not want that. And I think that this kind of trade just exposes a big flaw in baseball at this point as to why maybe there should be a salary cap in place. Because listen, like the two teams that were in on Skubal was the Dodgers and the Brewers, wildly different. The Brewers are a small market team that don't spend enough money, and the Dodgers are clearly a big market team that spend all the money in the world, and they are the best organization, in my opinion, in all of sports. Like, this is a big issue in baseball right now, because if you're the Brewers, like, listen, the Skubal return, people are talking about, like, oh, like, didn't really get that much in return, talking about the Tigers. Well, I mean, they got a pretty decent return. Like, Hope's a really good prospect who's going to be in their outfield at some point next summer. I think he's going to be he could potentially be a star down the road, but I guess we'll just have to see there. But the bigger issue is, if you're the Brewers, you can't afford to give up some of your top prospects for a rental. And you know what? Like, if you wanted to go for it this year, I guess. But also the Brewers, they need to have sustained success. And in order to have sustained success, you need to have a plethora of prospects at this point. And if you're the Dodgers, you know that you can spend all the money in the world. So it's like, you know what? If we're going to give up a couple of our top prospects here for a guy who's won back-to-back Cy Youngs, that's worth it for us, because also we're probably going to be able to extend him this offseason before that December 1st lockout. So I think it just exposes a much bigger issue in baseball. And the Dodgers, I mean, the rich get richer. I mean, it's incredible what they can do. And I don't know why we didn't see this coming for years at this point.
I mean, it's obviously baseball's had an economic tiered system, right? But it wasn't just the Dodgers. Obviously, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Mets, a Chicago team, the Giants had spent some money at various points. The Orioles even have gotten involved, the Blue Jays. But to the degree now that it is literally just one team that seems to be making the moves. And I get it. It's like, I was reading an article about this, how basically because these RSN deals around the country are falling apart for these major league teams, that meanwhile, the Dodgers have a great deal still in place from many years ago that pays them way more than others, that they just have more of a cushion and they can make some moves. If it doesn't work out for whatever the reason or Skubal leaves, it's okay. They have more money. They have more assets to play with than other teams do. And that's partly why this keeps happening. The thing, though, is baseball, it's sort of like hockey with a hot goalie. You can't predict what a baseball series is going to go, because do the hitters hit? Do the pitchers get the ball over the plate? What does this do for the Dodgers? On paper, I imagine they're the heavy favorite, but what do you think ultimately this does when you get to a real series? Is it just overwhelming that it's theirs to lose no matter what?
I mean, yeah, it's they're going to go for a three-peat here, Ben. There's just no way around it. It's like they legit have, I think, five aces on their roster right now. Like, they're going to have a sixth starter, and who knows what happened with Shohei Ohtani. Like, do they go out and have Ohtani just be a bullpen piece moving forward? I don't know. Like, they have the assets to do that, to move one of these starting pitchers. And you got Blake Snell, who's won a Cy Young, coming off the IL here probably pretty shortly. He's down rehabbing in the minors. You got Glasnow, who's another really good top pitching, could be a top three arm in any rotation out there. And, of course, he's like your number five, number six guy for the Dodgers at this point. So, listen, when it comes to October baseball, if anyone beats the Dodgers in a single game, I'd be stunned. Like, I genuinely would be stunned. This is the best team that I have ever seen put together, and now you just get probably the best pitcher in baseball, and good luck. Good luck going against Skubal and this Dodgers team at this point, because I just don't see anyone stopping them.
It does feel that way. We will we'll see how this all plays out in a bit. We're, of course, talking with Ryan Clary, who is host of the Locked on Nats podcast, as well as a producer for the B-Mitch and Finley show here on 106.7 The Fan. He's also a guy that is, I've seen him at Commanders training camp. He's a well-rounded sports thinker. I'll save your football takes for another day. Where are you at now here with the Nats? Obviously, they've hit a little bit of a stumble here to a degree the last couple of games. And they were already sort of in this, like, should they or shouldn't they make moves? They're obviously ahead of schedule this year from where people thought, but you also maybe you don't want to trade away prospects. On the other hand, you're not promised the playoffs in any season. So if you have a shot, maybe you should take it. Where are you right now with where the Nats are at in terms of whether they should sort of go for it or should pull back?
I think the Nationals should pull back. And I have never been, like, this is kind of a house money year in my opinion. And I don't think that the Nationals can just go out at this trade deadline and just fix all their issues. Right now, like, you lose Curtis Meade because you traded for Connelly early, which I think was a tremendous trade for the Nationals. And that does solve one of your issues. But then also, you now are kind of looking for a consistent right-handed power bat. And I think that having that void there is a pretty big miss right now for the Nats. But, of course, they've got the best offense in baseball. But back to just what we were talking about here, I think that the Nationals should be selling. Like, you've got Foster Griffin that you signed to a one-year, $5.5 million deal. And the reason why I would sell him is it comes down to this. Are you going to extend him? You're probably not. So, like, I'm not confident that the Learners are going to go out there and spend the money that it's going to take to get Griffin back here. I mean, the last big-time contract that he gave out was, what, 2019 Patrick Corbin? That was it. And so I just think that the Nationals right now, they're not going to be in a mode where they're going to be extending someone who just had a half a season of tremendous pitching. And I really like what Foster Griffin brings, but I think the sting is a lot worse if we were to hold on to him and have him walk in free agency and sign a much larger deal than I think a lot of us are going to anticipate, than just trading him now and getting prospects in return that, who knows, maybe it does help you right now. Maybe it helps you in 2027 or in 2028, but I think you should sell a guy like Foster Griffin. And then I think the second guy here is Luis Garcia Jr. I mean, we saw him get pulled from the game, what, 2 days ago with an injury. I think all is well with Luis Garcia, but I would trade him as well. Like, he's having this career year. He has a year and a half left on his deal. And I think that teams out there, like, who knows, maybe you do get a top 100 prospect in return for Luis Garcia Jr. And I think that helps the Nationals ultimately build a sustainable winner. And I think that at the end of the day is Paul DeBoney's goal.
Yeah. I mean, you make a great point. If you're not all convinced that you're going to keep him, you might as well move him. And also, look, just because you trade him, it doesn't mean you couldn't hypothetically re-sign him or sign him
exactly
as a free agent. It's just like, hey, right now where we're at, the prospects are ultimately going to mean more. We need the bigger picture. And, you know, pitching is always comes, teams pay a premium for pitching. There is no doubt about that. I imagine, at least the good news is, we're no longer in the discussion of are they going to trade Wood or Abrams. I hope that that's not the case. What's your read on, though, bigger picture with them? Because like you said, they haven't given out a bigger contract in some time. Not that they have to do that immediately, but it is to the same point, right? The reason the Nats got this big haul when they traded Soto was they did it early enough so that other teams wouldn't, you're just buying a rental. So I'm not suggesting that they're going to trade these guys at all, but where are you, what's your confidence level right now that they will ultimately get some deals done here? Because if they're not, then sort of the same story applies.
Well, as far as like a CJ Abrams trade or like an extension done,
do you believe that they are actually committed to doing that? Because if not, at some point, maybe they do have to look to make a deal if they're not going to sign the guy to an extension.
Yeah, like, I'm not convinced of it. Like, I don't think anybody could be at this point. I've always said this, Ben, like, you can tell me Bigfoot's there, but I got to see it for myself to believe it. And I have not seen Bigfoot yet with the Learners. I haven't seen them dish out a massive contract for a star player yet. We've seen them trade them away. And you know what? The Juan Soto deal was incredible for the Nationals. The 2021 with Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, that definitely could have been a much better deal with the Dodgers, but the Nationals, they've traded away their stars, and that's the way that I kind of expect things to go. Like, and also, I think the window passed to extend CJ Abrams. Like, this is something that should have been done 2-3 years ago, maybe coming off his rookie season, and then the Nationals just simply kind of dropped the ball on it. Like, I don't know if there were any negotiations. I don't know how far they got, if there were any, but that was a big miss by I think this ownership group, but also the Nationals front office then. And now, of course, he's putting up MVP numbers. I mean, we're talking about someone who's going to get a $300 million deal, like at least $300 million at this point. Like, he's going to get definitely a Trey Turner type of contract. And I think that the Nationals just, they're not going to extend him, but I also think they won't trade him at this deadline because, listen, If you're Paul DeBoney out there and you're telling everybody, we're going to win this year, like we're winners, we can go out there and win, and oh, we're going to go trade our best player or one of our best players with CJ Abrams. Like, could you imagine what that does for the clubhouse? Like, that's like the Commanders this year's deadline. They're like, you know what? We're going to trade Terry McLaurin. Like, how would that go in a locker room full of guys who are out there trying to compete every single day? So I think right now trading Abrams at this point makes no sense. In the off season, maybe we'll have that discussion here, but this is one of your most valuable players. I don't see the Nationals extending him, but I also don't see them trading him. And I just think right now, like, you just kind of have to ride it out and see what happens with CJ.
All right. Last thing here, obviously, if they're going to, I can't imagine whatever their decision is going to be in terms of the deadline hinges on today's result, but they have lost four in a row. They're at Atlanta, 135. First pitch, then it's four games against the Phillies. So they really can't afford to keep lose much more here if they want to stay in the mix. I think they're 3.5 right now out of the wild card spot. Cade Cavalli on the mound today. What do you think is going to be key today for the Nats to end this streak?
I mean, you know what? Like, Cade Cavalli's going to have to go deep in this game. I mean, this is going to be one of those games where, listen, you drop the first three games here, and the Nationals, like, you can't really afford to lose any other games. You're 3.5 games back for wild card spot, as you said there. I mean, you're starting to slip in the standings here. The trade deadline is tomorrow. It just kind of feels as if the walls are kind of caving in on this Nationals team. And I think that if they can go out here, get a win today, then turn the page, get to Philadelphia here, another big series against a really struggling team with the Phillies. They've lost 8 of their last 10 games at this point. Like, they are really just totally falling apart, the same series. So I think that the Nats today, you're going to have to get a deep Cade Cavalli start, get some momentum, take on the Phillies, and the trade deadline's tomorrow, and my gosh, there's going to be some fireworks, I think.
All right, last question for you. Let me take you out to Ashburn, because you were out there this week, and even if you weren't, I know there are many a hot take floating around in that brain of yours.
Ooh.
Give me your biggest Commander's take, 3 days of practices, going into, got more to go here. Just wherever you're at, biggest take right now on the Commanders.
Ben, give me Stephon Diggs. I mean, listen, I think this receiver group, like, I think we know what Terry is. I think Chig's going to have a pretty big season. Those things can be true, but you've got Jaden on a rookie contract. And the receivers I'm seeing out there right now, like Antonio Williams, I like him, but are we going to have this third-round rookie just totally break out this year? Like, is he going to be Terry McLaurin 2.0? Or just having that monster rookie season and take one 60 yards to the house against the Eagles week one, just like Terry did in 2019? I don't think so. Like, I like Antonio Williams, but you need receivers. You need to surround Jaden with weapons. Everyone's like, oh, well, we want to see these young players develop. No. You've got Jaden on this young deal. You have Stephon Diggs, who I think wants to be a Commander, and he is someone who has been a consistent 1,000-yard receiver for every team that he's been on. Go get the hometown kid. Bring him home. Give Jaden all the weapons possible and just make it as easy as possible for JD5, because Ben, like, does he need it? I think he does. He needs the help at this point. I like David Blau, but my gosh, like, give me another receiver. That's my main takeaway.
You can hear more of these takes on the Locked On Nats podcast, and of course with B. Mitch and Finley here middays on 106.7 The Fan. Ryan, you rock. He's also at RyanClary11 on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call that. Ryan, you rock. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully the Nats make it interesting for you here at the deadline one way or the other.
Of course, man. I'll catch you tomorrow, bright and early.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, yes, absolutely, man. I appreciate that. All right, rounding out here, we've got a little more to discuss. I'm about throwing a little Anthony Davis extension talk. This is going to be another big story of the week. We'll get to that next here on 106.7 The Fan. All right, just a quick thought here on the Wizards. The Anthony Davis contract extension talk is going to heat up this week. He's going to be eligible later this week. I think for people who are worried that the Wizards are going to give him a Trae Youngish type deal, I wouldn't worry about that. My wonder, though, is what can they do that works for the Wizards longer term and Anthony Davis, who's got a player option next year over $60 million? I can't figure out how to thread that needle. I'll talk more about that in the days ahead. But we got one more break to go here. Ben standing with you. Till we get to the Nats here on 106.7 The Fan. Time flies when you're having fun talking about sports. That's happened today, no doubt about it. 2 hours almost here in the books, getting everybody ready for Nats Braves at 105 is what we'll turn things over. A lot to discuss. We've talked about with Commanders training camp. I'll be out there again tomorrow for padded practice. And, you know, I talked earlier with Mitch Tischler about the receivers, and he was saying he's not desperate for Stephon Diggs, but obviously there would be some logic to doing that as well. I would just say on that front, like, I kind of agree. Like, I think they're going to want to let this play out a little bit. I understand that there is no obvious number two receiver. I totally get that. But I do think this is a better group from a depth perspective than a year ago. If David Blau knows how to, when to put guys in and out of the lineup, I think they can get things done. I know Jaden Daniels has said positive things about them. Obviously he's going to, but between these guys and having Chig Okonkwo able to line outside, I think they've got some options. So we'll see. I'm not anticipating a Diggs signing anytime soon, but that doesn't mean things can't change on a dime. Thank you so much to everybody for calling in today. Thanks to Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports, Ryan Clary, of course, host of the Locked On Nats podcast. If you want to follow me, Ben Standig on Twitter, lastmanstandig.substack.com is how you find my written work. Thanks to Wes behind the glass. Nats are up next. I'll see you at the top of the hour here, though. Until next time, see ya. All right, hey, Ben Standing here. I'm going to lead you in here to the Nats pregame show at 105 first pitch. 135 today, Cade Cavalli on the mound for the Nats. J.R. Richie for the Braves. Nats trying to break a four-game losing streak. Just a little over 24 hours away from the MLB trade deadline. We talked earlier in the show with Ryan Clary about, hey, should they make a move? So let me turn to our young hotshot here in the booth, Wes. Wes, I'm kind of the belief that, look, even if the Nats were maybe even a little bit better than where they are now, they're a little bit under 500. I just feel like I wouldn't go too hard into making a move. If they can acquire some sort of reliever without being too expensive, cool. But I would not go hard in, even though you never can throw away a chance at the playoffs. Where are you at?
Well, here's the issue, because the reason why they're in the position they are right now is because of the lineup. So if you break that up, then the team gets worse. And those are your best pieces, and really the only pieces that you have. Because if you get rid of Foster Griffin, there goes your best pitcher. So where's the pitching staff? I mean, it somehow gets worse than it already is right now. Now, they have guys in the minor leagues that they can trade, especially some infielders, besides Eli Willits, who's the third overall prospect in MLB's top 100 prospects. So keeping him and, you know, obviously keeping CJ is ideal, and I do think that they will do that. And I've heard from people on the inside that they plan on doing that unless some crazy package comes from left field, which is not going to happen. So I would trade minor leaguers. I think I would kind of... It's not pulling the plug time. This is a team that has been winning. We've seen them win consistently. They've lost four in a row. But tomorrow's a trade deadline. And, you know, Monday at 6 p.m., you can't trade anymore. So this is the opportunity for them right now. This is the best team. This is the best team they've had since winning the World Series, and fans want to see them do something with it.
So you're more in line to say, if nothing else, sort of stay pat in terms of the major league level. Hey, you know, you're not that far out. Maybe you get hot. Maybe you're the team that wins 9 out of 10, and all of a sudden you're back in it. So don't trade out. But, you know, again, if you're going to make any moves to somebody in the minors, as opposed to saying, hey, we're still building for the future. We could trade Garcia now, maybe a couple, you know, some other guys, and get prospects for the future. So, but you're saying, no, hold on. At a minimum, just don't do anything.
Yeah, man, they have been given a gift with how this team has been playing. If you go back to last year and the statistics that some of these guys had at the plate, it's not great compared to what they are now. You know, for Kiber Ruiz had a 500 OPS. Now he's up high 700s. This is a career year from him. So why wouldn't you have that leverage and use it for yourself? I mean, the Nats over and over again have trade away key pieces, and it was a great idea to get rid of Soto. We saw, and that's why they were able to get Wood and CJ, but you don't have that household name besides James Wood, who you're not going to trade, I hope, ever. Hopefully he's the next Ryan Zimmerman.
Right. I mean, at a minimum, obviously the goal is to Wood, Abrams, all the other pieces that they have that I think are part of their present and the future, what do we do to help that? And if they think ultimately helping that is to move on with some of these guys who are expiring deals like Foster Griffin and Garcia, I understand that rationale, but I get what you're saying as well. Hey, this has been a fun year. Why throw any cold water on it?
They haven't spent much money on this yeah. roster, so who cares about Foster Griffin's, what, $5 million deal? Who cares?
It's just more of like, hey, can you get two prospects out of it? You know, for a guy that's had a very good year, pitching always comes, costs a lot of money. All right. Nats baseball coming up next. Can they end their streak? Do they get any momentum going to the trade deadline tomorrow? We will see. Good luck to the Nats. Good luck to the Braves. Good luck to young Wes's take here. Enjoy the rest of the day. Ben Standing signing off. Go Nats.